1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8. Finally, all of you have unity of mind, sympathy, brotherly love, a tender heart, and a humble mind. Do not repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, bless. For this is you were called, that you may obtain a blessing. For whoever desires to love life and see good days, let him keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Our Father, that our desire would be for long life. That we would walk out of here a different person than we walked in. Lord, teach us what your word has to say about living, beginning first with me. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, a few weeks ago, we looked at some hard-hitting verses that are tied to what the verses we're looking at today. Our focus today is, even though we read verse 8 and 9, our focus today is going to be on 10, 11, and 12. That's kind of the second part of really of the context of this passage. Really, 8 through 12 are in its own section, so to speak, as far as the thoughts that Peter are giving, but we kind of divided it up so we can really extrapolate what Peter is writing to the churches here and what God has to say to us. So Peter, as we talked about a few weeks ago, Peter is calling the church to harmonize like your favorite gospel quartet. One of my favorite singing groups I was introduced to when I was in college was a group called a cappella. It was a quartet group. And was no music, no instruments behind it. It was just four parts put to perfect harmony. These guys, every once in a while, if I come across, I have the CD, and if I think about it, I'll put it in there. And if I'm traveling with Ryan, then he and I will sing along with it too. But it was just one of my favorite groups that I used to enjoy. So the Bible tells us that we're to harmonize the same way that a quartet would harmonize. We as a church need to harmonize that same way. And if I'm reviling evil, reviling for reviling, insult for insult, or if I return evil for evil, we're out of harmony. Even though we may think it's just, even though we may think it's right, we're out of harmony. Wherever you may be at, not limited to church. Don't think that 1 hour of church time gets you a free pass. I don't tell someone that they're, I can do it the rest of the time. No, that's not really what the passage is telling us to do. But in our lives, no matter what our circle is, we are to be in harmony. The Bible tells us not to repay evil for evil or insult for insult. Now, what I have here is some of the stuff that I found here, too. It's kind of interesting. And the reason why I present it, it's because there is some psychology that really supports the text that we'll see here, too. And a 2013 article, February article in Psychology Today, the article goes into what we've been talking about, the law of retaliation. And the article discussed the pros and cons of returning. Well, there's really no pros that it mentions here, but perhaps the drawbacks of reviling evil for evil or returning that evil, the law of retaliation. The first one, how we usually respond to is anger. If someone insults us, you know, we want to respond in anger. But the article says this is the weakest possible response, and this for three reasons. First, it shows that we take the insult and thereby the insulter seriously. Second, it suggests that there is truth in the insult. And third, it upsets and hurts us, which can invite further insults. And so even psychologists say if you are insulted for some reason, you don't return fire. Another response that was looked at or researched was acceptance. Now, this may seem to be a very weak response, the article goes on, but in many cases, it's actually the strongest response of all. When someone insults us, we ought to consider three things: this is hard, whether the insult is true, who it came from, and why. If the insult is true or largely true, the person it came from is reasonable and his motive is worthy, then the insult is not an insult but a statement of fact, and what's more, that it is potentially very harmful to us. Now, that is very hard because sometimes, you know, we're all mature enough where we realize that, you know, sometimes someone in our lives needs to come alongside us and tell us that we're wrong on something. But it's hurtful to us, too, when someone does it, even though it may be something very true. It comes back to us in an insult. Even though there may be some truth into it, somehow an insult just kind of like insulates us from seeing that. But there's a part of us where we need to swallow our pride and take a look at, is what that person is saying to me, is there any truth that I need to deal with it, no matter how hard or painful the insult would be. Another way of responding to insult is to return the insult. Several problems with the put-down, even though it could be a very clever one. Everyone loves a clever return fire put-down. First off, it does have to be clever, and second, has to occur at just the right moment. But even if we're as sharp as Oscar Wilde, a put-down is unlikely to be our best defense. The problem with the put-down, however witty it may be, is that it tends to equalize us with the insulter, raising him up or putting us down to their level. This gives him and the insult too much credibility. So perhaps returning the insult, that may seem what we want to do, we may seem witty and clever about it, probably not the best idea. Humor is an especially effective response for three reasons. It undermines the insult, it brings the audience on our side, and it diffuses the tension of the situation. So if someone insults me, and if I can respond in a humorous way, maybe something, a self-depreciating way toward me, it kind of breaks the ice, makes everyone laugh, and that may seem to work as well. The downside of humor is that it requires quick thinking. In contrast, ignoring the insult is easier and, in fact, more powerful. One day, a person struck the Roman senator Cato. Well, that's not the clothing store Cato. That's the Roman senator Cato. When he was out in the public baths, when the person realized that it was Cato whom he had struck, he came to apologize. But instead of getting angry or accepting the apology, Cato replied, "I don't remember being struck." The subtext is that it's saying there is, you are so insignificant that I don't even care to register your apology, let alone take offense at your insult. And so when accusations or insult comes our ways, the best thing that we can do is just simply ignore it. Even though there's something within our soul, something within our very being that wants to lock and load and return fire, the best thing that we can do is ignore it. Peter then quotes verse 34, or a modified version of it. "What man," if I may read it again, "what man is there who desires life and loves many days that he may see good? Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Turn away from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous and his ears toward their cry." So, rhetorical question. When do you think that David is writing this, when he's talking about this? Do you think he was writing this when he was a shepherd herding sheep? No. Maybe when he was established as a king? No. He wrote this when he was hiding from Saul. Now, David had already been anointed by Samuel to be king, the next king, but you know, Saul didn't really get the memo, so to speak, that he was out. He got the pink slip, but he wasn't willing to vacate his desk. So David had, it seems like he had every right to be angry, to retaliate against someone who was wrongly out to kill him. So when people that are in the church audience in Asia Minor, as this letter from Peter is circulating around, and they're hearing this portion of Peter's writing, they know it's talking about David. They know that it's referencing back to Psalm 34. And when you mention King David to a Jewish audience during the New Testament time in this era, people took notice. King David was the man. King David to Israel was what Abraham Lincoln was to the United States. He was the greatest king, the greatest leader that Israel had. And people would follow what David had to say. David, King David was their man to follow after, which is the reason why Peter threw that in there, because David would add credibility to what Peter was trying to get across. So there's three things I want to point out to us regarding this idea to about what Peter is writing about, long days and our submission to authority, and how we relate to one another. There's kind of a social rule that Peter is getting across to the young early church in this passage. The first point I want to make is live long and prosper. I know that's a Star Trek reference, but really, when you look at verse 10, that's what it's kind of getting at there. For look at verse 10 once again. For whoever desires to love life and to see good days, drink Plexus, eat non-GMO foods, and stay away from gluten. Is that what it says? No. Let him keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. During a TED Talk, I was watching these TED Talks, there's a psychologist named Susan Pinkler. She was discussing the areas of high concentration of people living over 100 years old. And these concentrations of these people, these centenarians, so to speak, they live in what's called blue zones. I want you to remember that word, blue zone. They live in these areas called blue zone. And there is one particular place, it was the Italian island of Corsica, off the Italian coast, where there was this one particular blue zone she went to research. The observation that Pinkler came to, that it had nothing to do with diet, where these centenarians lived, had nothing to do with diet, positive attitudes, or genetics, but it was a constant flow of people coming in and out of their lives to check in on them. And what he is saying, what the conclusion was, that there was a social environment that contributed to longevity. It was a social quality that contributed to longevity. There was another study done by someone living in Salt Lake City. They sampled 10,000 people, and they had these terms. They had these, these predictors, so to speak, of what would determine longevity. The lowest predictor was clean air. That was the lowest contributing quality to a person's longevity. The top two might surprise you. It had nothing to do with flu vaccines, diet, exercise, smoking or non-smoking, but the top two features consisted for longevity, close relationships, and social integration. The study concluded that social integration releases healthy neurotransmitters gained by a handshake, eye contact, releases oxytocin, and creates trust. So what science tells us now, over 2,000 years ago, Peter encouraged or commanded the church not to let your tongue compromise your social relationships. And even David wrote about it much earlier. It's hard to imagine that what I say to people will contribute to their longevity. I could give Lincoln some vitamins. He may live 5 more years. But if I'm looking at Lincoln and my body is turned toward him, and if I'm engaged with Lincoln, I may add 10 years to his life. The same tongue that is supposed to produce harmony can just as easily disrupt harmony. Our church here needs to be a blue zone. The same blue zone that is responsible within the social environment that contributes to this longevity, to this 100-plus year people. I think I didn't mention this too. In these blue zones, in Corsica, there were six times as many more centenarians, that's people that live 100 years or more, than the Italian mainland, and 10 times as many centenarians that live in the United States. And they contribute that to the social quality of someone's life. And so when we fail to live up to verse 10 here, we're actually killing ourselves. When you really think about it, my life needs to be a blue zone. Our church needs to be a blue zone. What am I doing to be a blue zone? What am I doing in my life that will contribute to longevity? That's something we need to wrap our heads around too. The first thing that what Peter says is do not return evil for good. Watch your mouth. If I'm going to contribute to myself long life, if I'm going to contribute to your long life, I need to be careful what I say to you. And I do not return fire. It says there in verse 10, keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. That there, the verse 10 talks, it's not as much as about conversation, but really it's a social context. It's how I relate socially to people. I need to be careful what I say. I need it when I, if my tongue feels like it needs to speak evil, I need to turn that switch off. I need to be a blue zone. And our challenge for us to, in your environment, be a blue zone. Contribute to long life. Verse 11 is turn and run. I need to turn and run. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. The word turn here means bending one's path at the approach of evil. I've kind of used this illustration before. But when there are times when I would go for a walk, and sometimes I'd have to walk either on Norwood or Victory Church. And of all the deer that's coming out, there's always a good chance that I'm going to come across a carcass. Now, when I come across that carcass, too, I smell it before I see it. And then I have a tendency to give it a wide berth. I just kind of walk around it. I don't stop and examine it. I don't get a stick and poke and play with it. I give it a wide turn and walk around it. We need to treat evil the same way as it would a dead carcass. We don't look at evil and toy with it. I don't try to fix it. I walk around it. I give it a wide berth. Just as what Peter is talking about here. Don't examine, analyze, or correct or fix the evil. Walk around it. The word peace that's referring to here, it says, let him seek peace and pursue it. The word peace is the verb iro. It means to join or bind together that which has been separated. What's more important than winning the debate, an argument, or a conflict is being at peace. The verse does not tell us, let him seek to win the debate or win the argument or win the fight. It means to win peace. And if I can't win peace, if peace doesn't come easily, I go after it. The verse says to pursue it. The word pursue means to lay hold of, to chase with earnest, to repay evil with good and promote peace and by meekly enduring abuse. Fire cannot be fought with fire. If I go out and seek trouble, I'm going to find it. But if I go out and seek peace, I can find it as well. So the times where conflict comes in your life, where insult comes into your life, what Peter is telling the early church here and what he's telling us here today is that I need to seek peace before I seek myself being right. I need to seek peace before I win the argument. That's the end all. It goes against my natural, sinful nature. Because I want to win the argument. I want to take the gloves off and win the fight. But what Peter commands us to do here is to seek peace. I need to be seeking peace. And if it doesn't come easily, I need to go after it. Book of Proverbs tells us that a soft tongue breaketh the bone. And in Proverbs 13, he that keepeth his mouth keepeth his life. Proverbs there are written for a reason. I don't find longevity in my essential oils or the keto diet. I find longevity as if I can produce a blue zone and be a blue zone to other people around me. Third point I want to make, God is looking. Verse 12 there. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayer, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Now, I've never watched this program before, but I kept thinking of the theme song for Walker, Texas Ranger. You know, it goes, the eyes of the ranger are upon you. So that's what I kept thinking of. That's really all I know about the program, too. Several years ago, our youth group, we played this activity back in Charlotte called Underground Preacher. And the purpose of Underground Preacher, the objective was, is that you were kind of like living in this communist era environment, and you had to smuggle this one preacher from his hiding place to a safe zone. And so the Underground Preacher would go hide somewhere, and the group of kids would go in groups looking for the preacher to bring him back to his safe zone. And throughout the game, there were these KJB agents, so to speak, that would come and arrest the group and lock the group in a kind of a timeout for about 5 minutes before they can get out again. Well, there are particular times that I was the Underground Preacher, and I had fun with it too. I was in charge of the sound system, so I took the lapel mic, and I was hiding somewhere in the baptistry underneath all these props. And so I would talk to the kids, and I would make these weird noises and just these ghostly kind of sayings or something to kind of like really creep them out. And there have been times where I could hear, I'm like laying down, buried underneath all these props, and I can hear these kids like looking and moving stuff, and they never saw me. There was another time where we did this, and I was the Underground Preacher, and I was kind of barricaded behind some tables, and the youth pastor was pumping a fog machine through the main auditorium, and the smoke detector caught it and called the fire department. The fire department had to come over, saw all the smoke, the fake smoke, or rather the fog machine, I should say, the fog in the auditorium, and they were like, oh man, this is it right here. And so all the kids are going out, but no one got me. So I had several, I told Katie, give me some of their friends' numbers. So I'm like calling these guys and just saying, hey, I'm on fire. You got to come get me. You left me here in here too. And they're like, Mr. Rail, he's still in there. So, but I say all that to say this too. When you look at that verse there and you see, for the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, we cannot hide from God. Yes, it was fun to hide from those kids, but we cannot hide from God. There's a sovereign quality knowing that God's eyes are observing the good and the evil, as it's written about in Psalm 15. So Peter, in this particular verse here, Peter goes on to use this anthropomorphic expression, such as ears and face. A few weeks ago, Rachel and I were talking about body language. Just after church, we had this conversation. We're talking about body language, and I was telling her a story about this one particular guy. Went Joy's graduation. There's a family that we had become acquainted with, and you know, when I try to talk to someone, I try to look someone in the face, and I try to lean in to show interest. I make sure that my shoulders are squared up with someone, because remember, if you go like this and I'm talking to Sharon, if I'm looking like this, it tells me my body wants to go this way even though I'm talking this way. And so I tried very consciously to make sure that my body expression says I'm interested in what you have to say. So I'm talking to this one guy and I'm facing him and his shoulders are squared up, but a little bit afterward, he kind of opens up. So he's standing like there, then he goes like this. So then I go like this, then he goes like this. It's like we're doing a waltz. I go like this, and he goes like this too. And so it's very obvious that perhaps he was running out of things to say to me, and it was ready to kind of change an audience there as well. But we listen more with our ears But our eyes and face communicate interest. If my shoulders are squared up with yours, it should indicate interest. If I lean in to communicate attention, we all want, then we're going. But there are times when, you know, looking at someone may not be very good. When you look at someone, they're going like this. They don't want that eye contact. Probably seen, or you've seen those videos or heard stories about when you talk to someone and they're looking away, it indicates mistrust or deceitfulness too. Joy and I went to this security seminar over at the convention center this past Wednesday. And the guy that was doing the seminar, he would like work for SWAT and Homeland Security, and he does training, these like high airplane hijack situation, does training on that stuff too. And he told us that if you go to Disney World, now what they do at Disney World, they have people dressed in plain clothes. I don't know if they're cops, but they've had training this. And they go over to certain tourists and residents, and they're looking, they're making eye contact with people. And they're kind of checking them out, looking for the body sign or the body language there. So if I'm looking at someone and they're kind of like looking away, or if they have what they call the 1,000-yard stare, they're kind of looking away. Or if there's something there that they don't want me to know about, if I have something, they may, all of a sudden I'm tagged, I'm profiled because of my behavior. And so what this guy also did too, he says sometimes he'll look at someone and he'll make eye contact with someone, then talk to them, then walk away, then turn back around and make that same icon just to see where their eyes are going. And if they're up to no good, they're looking away. Or they've got some weird 1,000-yard stare look in their face. And that's the person that they follow. When I look at this verse here, at verse 12, the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. I imagine the same thing taking place there. There's something about the face of a parent or teacher, employer, or law enforcement that we just don't want to make eye contact with. We don't. If we're doing something wrong, we don't want eye contact with God. If we're doing something right, you know, it says at the beginning of the verse, the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous. Well, then it's fun. But when the face is set against the Lord, face against the one who does evil, that's not fun. I'd rather have the eyes than the face. So just kind of put that in your head. Rather have the eyes than the face. The same eyes that look favorably upon the righteous who do good and will hear people's prayers is the same face that are against those who do evil. So what do we need to be taking away from this? What do we need to understand what Peter is writing to the church about, and how do we make it applicable to us today? Three things. First off, pursuing the good day, the pursuing the good is not about my relationship with other people. We talked about that too. If I'm going to pursue longevity, I must first be right with my relationship with God. If I'm right in my relationship with God, then I can create a blue zone. We need to be creating blue zones around us where I can contribute to someone's longevity. Because the verse tells us, and it's not just their longevity, it's my longevity as well. If I don't return fire, evil for evil, or insult for insult, I'm going to, this stuff is not an exact science, but I'm going to contribute to longevity. At least that's what God is saying. That's what Peter's writing about. Second thing, we need to be avoiding evil like spoiled food. Be careful what you allow into your mind, what you watch on TV, what you look at in the internet, even music. Music is not amoral. Be careful what you put into your head. Avoid it. Bend. When you walk around it, treat it like a bend. We'll give it a wide berth. Be careful what you're putting in your head. Third thing I want us to remember is that God has a body language. God has it for different people. God has two body languages, one for the righteous and one for the evil. For the righteous, it consists of the eyes, and that's good. We want that. But for the evil, it's the face, and we don't want that. So, can I make eye contact with God? Or, if I'm at face with God, am I kind of looking away in shame and being deceitful? throughout this week, ask yourself, how can I be a blue zone? Be ready for when that person comes, whether it's a close family member or a boss or whoever it is, when they treat you wrong, don't return gunfire, but return a blessing. You return a blessing, and that is the hardest thing that we can do. But when you return a blessing, you're creating a blue zone. Be a blue zone, not just for the person that you're having to return goodness to in exchange for evil, but for yourself. If you want to contribute to a long life, it doesn't have to do with the caveman diet or the keto diet or whatever diet's out there. It's how we treat one another. We need to be a blue zone. Avoid evil and make eye contact with God. Father, thank you so much for your words that you had Peter pen. These words, they're applicable to us today as it was to the early church. Even though the culture is different, the people are different, the problems are different, Lord, the message is the same. So, Father, I pray that we will do our best through the power of your Spirit, through that relationship with you, Father, contributing to longevity, that we would be a blue zone. Lord, you are so good to us. We didn't deserve it, but you sent your Son Christ to die on the cross for us, so that through him, we have the victory. This world we live in, it's not the end. We tend to live that way. Father, forgive us for living in this world like that's all that it is. But Father, there's a heaven that awaits us. So Lord, help us to live in those heavenly moments here on earth. In Jesus' name, amen.